Wow, it's Friday. A very dark Friday. A little cool also, but it is still Friday, and it's 5 p.m., so that's great. Double happy hour, as we put it. Triple if you count the fact that it's time for American Net Radio here on WHPC. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan, running the board, of course, despite it being getting nearer to the holiday season, when it's sometimes difficult for Heidi to get here. What we've been doing for about the past, a little bit over 3 months now, on Friday being when we do the How Music Changed series, we've been dedicating about a little over 3 months, maybe 4 months now, to the music of Jimi Hendrix. And I've turned myself into a huge Jimi Hendrix fan doing this. Now, I've always been a Jimi Hendrix fan, don't get me wrong, but by doing what we're doing here, by going really deep and by listening to his stuff in a more or less chronological order, I'm hearing things that I never really heard myself until we started doing this series. And I've really taken, I'm really taken by how incredible Jimi Hendrix really had been in his time. I knew he was great. I just didn't, I'm getting, through all of what we've been through here, through 16 shows so far, today being number 17, I'm just beginning to realize that there were elements of his greatness that I was not aware of. And this is, it's pretty darn awesome. So now that we're up to, after 17 shows, we're finally covering his third album, which is pretty amazing. 17 hours it takes us. That's because there's so much material that had been released. Live material, not all of it live material. A lot of it is studio recordings and stuff that was released posthumously. Some of it bad. So I'm not even counting that. I'm avoiding that stuff. I'm only trying to play the stuff that I've come across that is great. So I'm very proud of the 16 shows that we've done, because I think I'm only playing, you know, the best of the best. That's how much there is. But here we are now, finally on part two of Electric Ladyland. Last week was sides one and two. And I'd like to point out that if you are a fan of Jimi Hendrix, or if you wish to hear the entire album, please help yourself and go to our website, which is AmericanHitNetwork.com, and just look up The Life and Music of Jimi Hendrix, Part 16. The show is there on demand. You can hear it anytime you wish. If you want to hear them in order, you can go and do that now, and then this show will be up in about a couple of hours' time, because we try to get them up right away. And the whole series is there, actually, the whole, 1 through 16. So you can pretty much take a deep dive if you wish. But now that we're on Electric Ladyland, from my perspective, it's sort of sad to think that this is the album that tore the Experience apart as a band. And it's also the reason that Jimi Hendrix would lose Chas Chandler as his producer, and ultimately as his manager as well. By just about anybody's standard, except Jimmy's, the sessions for this album were a completely uncontrolled mess that seemed to result in nothing worthy of an album to the outsider. Instead, though, it is an album that is generally considered to be Jimi Hendrix's studio masterpiece. Over the four sides, you can sense the loose structure and the wobbly sense of direction. But it's impossible to deny that the album is a timeless classic that has withstood the test of time for over a half century. 60 years just about now. It's incredible. With today's show, we take a close look at the album's second, and in my opinion, best half. So, I think the people who were around Hendrix, including his manager, Chas Chandler, and the band, who were having trouble with what he was doing, weren't really thinking about the times that they were recording in. Noel Redding, the bassist, was the band member that was the most miffed by what was going on. He was outraged and kept walking out of the studio because Jimmy would show up with friends and he would be jamming, and Noel Redding wanted to work, not realizing that jamming was Jimmy's way of working in a lot of ways. And he ended up, like, if you were listening to last week's show, you ended up with a track that ended up being one of the best tracks on the album, Voodoo Child, on side one, a 15-minute track that was just Jimmy hanging out with some of friends who came back to the studio, and it ended up being one of the best songs on the album. But everybody else was complaining about stuff like that. But this is what was happening in 1968. Everybody was beginning to get experimental. They were stretching things out. There was a lack of formality at this point in time. This is when the Beatles put out the White Album. You know, the Beatles, you know, a double album, and an album that was really all over the place. Looking back, a lot of people say that that's the Beatles' best album now because of the fact that it's all over the place and that it's got so many different facets to it. I'm not saying that everybody would think that that's their best album, but a lot of people do. And it's the same sort of thing here with Electric Ladyland. So let's get down to it. We can open it up with a great opening track for the second half of the album. A song that you're probably going to hear twice. I know you're going to hear twice in different ways today. But here it is in its actual written form, a song called Rainy Day, Dream Away.
side. Just let it groove its own way. Let it drain the worries away. Lay back and groove on a rainy day. Lay back and dream.
Now, this is what's cool about that, because that's Rainy Day Dream Away, and it fades down there. But like I said, it's actually Rainy Day Dream Away Part 1. So, but you'll, well, I guess if you're not familiar with the album, you'll understand later. But if you are familiar with the album, you know exactly what I'm talking about, because it ends up coming back later on. Now, the next two tracks, interestingly enough, I did not know this, went by completely different names depending on where you bought the album. And also, the way the album looked would look completely different depending on where you bought the album. If you bought, for example, Electric Ladyland in America, you got this, the cover was just a picture of like almost like an electric red photo of Jimmy live on stage with his jaw open, head back, and a live shot of him on stage with some sort of lighting. Not the most clear photo in the world, but not a bad one. But you know, whatever. Jimmy didn't like it. Jimmy was not fond of the cover. But if you got the same album in England, there was a bunch of naked girls on the cover. And Jimmy freaked out about that. As much as he may have thought it was a cool photo, he thought it was a horrible idea for an album jacket, because he knew it was going to cause problems, and he knew that it was going to cause all sorts of problems with it getting advertised and such. And he was right. It did cause all sorts of problems, and it did really hamper his sales overseas. So the other thing that's different, it's like some of the song titles. Like, for example, on this side, after Rainy Day Dream Away, in America, you would hear this song called 1983, A Merman I Should Turn to Be, which would run for, oh, I don't know, something like half of the length of the remaining songs on side three. And then that would fade into a song called Moon Turn the Tides, Gently, Gently Away. Okay, fine. But if you bought the album in England or Europe, the exact same piece of music would have the title Three Ellipses instead of Four. That was the title for the entire piece. And I never knew that. I'm like, I'm just looking at this now because of Wikipedia, and I'm like, Three Ellipses instead of Four? What does that mean? But yeah, that's the UK title. So, for that reason, it's pretty obvious. We're going to play them both together. If it's the same song in the UK, we're going to have to play them as though it's the same song regardless. So, we're going to hear 1983, A Merman I Should Turn to Be, as it segues into Moon Turn the Tides, Gently, Gently Away.
Decide to take a last walk through the noise to the sea. Not to die, but to be reborn. Away from land so battered and torn. Say, can you see it's really such a mess? Every inch of her is a fighting mess. Giant pencil and lipstick tube shaped flames.
continue to rain and cause screaming pain and the Arctic stains from silver blue to bloody red as our feet find the sand and the sea. Is straight ahead. That's what they say. That's why they come up with this spin. And they also said it's impossible for a man to live and breathe underwater. Forever was a main complaint. And they also threw this in my face. They said, anyway, you know good and well, it would be beyond the will of God and the grace of the king. Of the king. So my darling and I make love in the sand to salute the last moment ever on dry land. Our machine is done its work, played its part well. Without a scratch on our body, I may bid it farewell. Starfish and giant flumes greet us with a smile. Before our heads go under, we take our last look at killing noise.
Warp the outer style. Oh,
used to an aqua world is so very dear. Right this way smiles a mermaid. I can hear a ladder's full of cheer.
WHPC, WHPC HD, Garden City. You're listening to American Hit Radio, and we are playing the album Electric Ladyland in its entirety. Part one was last week. We are playing part two this week. What you just heard was the entirety of side three. The track that you just heard, the rather strange psychedelic track that you just heard, was 1983, A Merman I Should Turn to Be. Also, segueing into Moon, Turn the Tides, Gently, Gently Away. Really just one long track. Or called Three Ellipses instead of Four in the UK for some reason. The flute on that song is played by Chris Wood of Traffic, which is interesting because that's the second member of Traffic who makes an appearance on this album. Steve Winwood was playing organ on Voodoo Child on side A. And so there's that. And I noticed like during that one strange break in the middle where things really began to break down, it almost sounded like it was going to be like a drum thing with the sound effect and everything. And I said, it must have had a lot of influence on Led Zeppelin when they did that drum break for Whole Lot of Love with the cymbals. I said, definitely were listening to this album when they did that. Jimmy was doing the production at this point in time. Now, Chaz Chandler was gone. So if you were wondering who was coming up with those crazy psychedelic ideas, and that was all Jimmy. This is why everybody else was leaving, because Jimmy, they thought that he lost his mind doing some of that stuff. But it is weird. There's no doubt about it. But it's part of what makes the album so special and different. I mean, he did go that far. So now we flip it over to the fourth side. And I mentioned before when we were playing Rainy Day Dream Away that we'd get a little bit of a return And that's exactly where we begin here with a track called Still Raining, Still Dreaming.
And getting uptight, just let it groove its own way. Let it drain your worries away. Lay back and groove on a rainy day. Lay back and dream on a rainy day. Lay back and groove.
Another mostly a jam session, and that's not the experience really at all. That's Buddy Miles on drums for that track. I believe it's Jimmy on bass, no Redding not being present for that, and Mike Finnegan on organ, Freddie Smith playing saxophone on Rainy Day Dream Away and the Still Dreaming thing for both of those tracks. Now, for the story about what was happening here, I can actually turn to the book that was put out by his stepsister, Jimi Hendrix. Both the band's troubles and Hendrix's crowded schedule of personal appearances wreaked havoc on Hendrix's efforts to steer Electric Ladyland toward completion. To the guitarist's dismay, the album wasn't finished before the experience barked on yet another U.S. tour, beginning in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So between shows, Hendrix returned to the record plant to labor over mixes and overdubs. You can imagine that. He's doing shows and then flying back to do mixes and then going back to do shows and flying back and doing mixes. The album was finally sequenced and delivered to Reprise in the United States and Track in the United Kingdom. The album's finally cost approached $70,000, a considerable sum for that era. Unlike contemporaries such as Bob Dylan and the Beatles, whose master recordings were owned by their record label, Hendrix himself underwrote Electric Ladyland. It was really expensive because we were playing and recording at the same time, which is a whole lot of strain on you, Hendrix explained in an interview conducted after the album's release. Therefore, you have to go back into the studio again and redo what you might have done two nights ago. The money doesn't make any difference to me because that's what I make the money for, to make better things. Hendrix had been involved in nearly every facet of the creation of Electric Ladyland, reaching far beyond supplying his voice and instrumentation into the album's final mixing and sequencing. His vision for the album even extended to its packaging. Friend and photographer Linda McCartney, well, she became Linda McCartney, had taken photographs of the experience in Central Park, surrounded by children. In addition, Eddie Kramer was also an amateur photographer, and Jimmy selected a host of Kramer's black and white photographs, in addition to those of Linda McCartney and photographer David Segal, to ring the inner gatefold sleeve, and had the Linda McCartney photo to be on the cover. As the experience tour wound through Salt Lake City and Denver, Hendrix finished his Electric Ladyland sleeve designs, as well as the poem titled Letter to the Room Full of Mirrors that he wished to include inside the gatefold sleeve. Hendrix then dispatched elaborate instructions on the jacket design to Reprise so that manufacturing of the album would commence. When the album was issued in October of 1968, though, Hendrix was bitterly disappointed to see that his artwork directions had been altered by both labels, or basically thoroughly ignored. Reprise replaced the McCartney Central Park images with two color shots by Carl Ferris, whose images were responsible for the first album, Are You Experienced? Track, however, opted a much more controversial approach. Because the experience had moved its base of operations to America, Track executives Kit Lambert and Chris Stamp, the same people who were working for The Who, were eager to recapture the attention of the British press. They commissioned photographer David Montgomery to shoot an image of 19 naked women, and the resulting cover created a public relations uproar that exceeded Lambert and Stamp's expectations and soon spread across Europe. The photograph was so controversial that remedies such as housing the LP jacket in a brown paper bag were bandied about. Some stores even took the album and removed the plastic and bent it open so that the naked ladies would be on the inside, bending it on its spine so that it would so you couldn't see it. Unbelievable. Hendrix seethed, feeling that the stunt demeaned the labor that he had invested into the album. All I can say is that I had no idea that they had pictures of dozens of nude girls on it, Hendrix complained in an interview. People have been asking me about the English cover, and I don't know anything about it. I didn't know it was going to be used. It's not my fault. Can you imagine that? Doing all that work, spending $70,000 in 1968 money, you go through all the trouble and time to basically pick a photograph that Linda McCartney has done for you, and you tell them explicitly that that's what you want, and they're thoroughly, everybody ignores you, and it's your album? Oh, I want to bust heads. Anyway, next up, what's the next track on this? Let's see, where were we? Okay. It's called House Burning Down. We'll pick up from there.
Oh, is that black smoke coming from? He just coughed and changed the subject and said, oh, well, I think it might snow some. So I left him sipping his tea, and I jumped in my chair and rode off to see just why and who could it be this time. Sisters and brothers, daddies, mothers, standing around crying. When I reached the scene, the flames were making a ghostly whine. So I stood on my horse's back, and I screamed without a breath. I say, oh, baby, why did you burn your brother's house down? Disgusting, so we paint red through the sky. I say the truth is straight ahead, so don't burn yourself instead. Try to learn instead of burn, hear what I say. So I burned and rode away, but I'll never forget that day. Cause when I reached the valley, I looked way down across the way. A dying boat from space landed with eerie grace and came and taken all the dead away.
This brings us to the golden moment. I mentioned last week, I believe, that Dave Mason sang background vocals on Crust Down Traffic, yet another member of Traffic, the third member of Traffic who's on this album. Well, he appears on this next track as well, an incredible version of All Along the Watchtower, which was a favorite Dylan song of Jimi Hendrix's. As he said, full of wonderful lyrical imagery, which is why he loved Bob Dylan. I felt like All Along the Watchtower was something I had written but could never quite get together, Hendrix explained. I often feel like that about Dylan. Anyone who doesn't appreciate him should read the words of his songs. They're full of joys and tragedies of life. In the studio, Hendrix, of course, assumed the role of producer while recording Watchtower, joined by Mitch Mitchell, Dave Mason, and the Rolling Stones guitarist Brian Jones, who was mostly edited out. Noel Redding did not participate. As much as Hendrix was pained by all the slights that was going on with the people with the record album and everything else, he didn't have a negative, none of this had a negative impact on the album's popularity. The album was a runaway success. Just 1 month after its release, Electric Ladyland topped the Billboard U.S. album chart. While Are You Experienced, his first album, continued to thrive in the top 10. All Along the Watchtower, the first single issued from the album, broke into the UK top 5 and peaked at number 20 on the Billboard singles chart, the highest position ever for an Experience single. Here it is.
be some kind of way out of here. Say the joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine. Come and dig my earth. None will level on the mine. Nobody of it is worth.
As awesome as it is, we've only got one track left. I gotta let it go right now. It's awesome because, well, if you remember on side one, we heard Voodoo Child, and we've heard a couple of songs that were basically coming back in bits and pieces. It's the same thing here. The way that side one ends is the way that side four ends, with Voodoo Child, Slight Return. I love this. Hope you can join us again next Friday as we continue on with 1969. Take care, folks.
We'll be right back. Thank you.